input was from the National Soybean Oxford Center, where we got the issue around particularly domestic tourism. I'm not saying that other areas were not touched, but the DG emphasized on domestic tourism as a way forward, whereas the DG talked about the South-South corridor, issues of airports, and then issues of issues around e-visas and then the trends, the international trends that could then influence tourism in South Africa. Then we had Dr. Sibusiso Khuzwayo with contextualization based on legislation, talking of the different spheres of government, coordination, and the other background information to tourism and our oversight role as parliament. I think as you heard in the different inputs here, they have assisted us in making, doing our oversight and then looking at the state of tourism in the country one way or the other. Then there was the National Development Plan implications for tourism, the issue of the centrality of the National Development Plan, the diagnostic report, that it was a long-term report, the six pillars of the National Development Plan, the importance of soft infrastructure like management and knowledge, and the issue of the confusing ambition and achievement. When you are seated, you think you can achieve this, that, and the other, but you have not looked into your capacity, you have not looked into your resources to achieve that. And cultivating a culture of consequences. And then we had the tea break, then we had synergies between tourism programs and arts and culture, where a lot of synergies were brought out, and we learned a lot about the heritage sites in South Africa and what it involved. And I remember in Mexico, there is a package which is called intangible, distinct heritage, where you go for music, you go for food, you go for the stories, you go to rural communities in that non-tangible tourism, heritage tourism. They have a tangible tourism where they take you to the pyramids and so forth. So, and then the issue of museums and so forth. What was outstanding in the morning was the issue of training, where I forgot to call upon Mr. Zotej around the issue of training in culture and heritage tourism. So that was how far we went. So now we are having a presentation from the Presidential Infrastructure Plan, which is aligning tourism to the Presidential Infrastructure Plan, which is going to be a presentation by Mr. Kasim Nakuda. Mr. Nakuda has requested to leave almost immediately after the presentation, as his flight is 4:30. Then from there we shall be having an input from DG, Mr. Vus Madonsela, DG of Cooperative Governance, on the significance of local government in tourism development. And then thereafter, we shall have tourism and environment interaction from Mr. Peter Lukey, and then we have cancelled the presentation from the Deputy Minister, as we received an apology that he is not available due to health reasons. Thereafter then we shall be having discussions, and then as we are having discussions, then we immediately after that we shall read you our summary recommendation and then give you the outline for the next stage. So over to you, Mr. Kasim Nakudu. Salamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Thank you, Chair. Members of the Portfolio Committee of Tourism, Director General, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Kasim Nakuda, as indicated by the Chair, and I'm here to try and indicate what alignment is there between the tourism industry and the National Infrastructure Plan that falls under the PICC. Just some background to the PICC. The PICC started out when the new growth path identified a need to create 5 million jobs by 2020. One of the biggest job drivers that was identified within the context of the new growth path was infrastructure here. Infrastructure was seen to lay the basis for higher growth, inclusive jobs, and higher job creation. However, the pace of infrastructure development spending on infrastructure seemed to decrease over time and not increase here. There were blockages in the system, which included weak implementation. There was problems with capacity within the state, and also poor project development and planning within the state here. The projects in government were not always strategic. None of them were integrated and aligned with national priorities. And there was also poor coordination across government here, which slowed projects and limited their impact here. In response to that, government then established what they called the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. And the idea there was to develop a single infrastructure plan that would be monitored and centrally driven within the state, and also use that to identify who's responsible and hold people to account for the rollout and delivery of infrastructure here. The idea was also to develop a 20-year pipeline, so you could have more implementation over different administrations instead of planning, stop-start sort of planning and implementation across different administrations. The terms of reference of the PICC was to ensure systematic selection, planning and monitoring of large projects, and within that context here, the PICC then identified 5-year priorities, also tried to look at 20-year project pipelines. There's some development objectives that the PICC looks at. So for example, over the 20-year pipeline, we try and identify what projects are taking place, when are they meant to come on board, what sort of skills are required at what point in time in the economy, and we're developing a skills plan to address that here. In terms of localization, for companies to establish industries within an economy, they need certainty over time. And so what the PICC said is that if you give a 20-year time frame for projects, then at least you create certainty for investors to actually establish industries around those projects. And also the fact that you have a central database of all infrastructure projects across the country, it's easy to see what the demand is for skills, cement, bitumen, and other inputs that would be required in the industry, and so you could use that to address job creation and investment in South Africa. Empowerment is another key objective, and in terms of empowerment, we're looking at youth empowerment and also black economic empowerment, and also research and development here. We're looking at what research and development opportunities can come out of developing the infrastructure plan here. And how can we use research and development to better roll out infrastructure in South Africa? Another key issue that is being looked at within the context of the PICC is maintenance here. A lot of new structures are coming up here, but a lot of old structures are being neglected here. And so we're focusing and trying to see, do departments have maintenance frameworks in place to address infrastructure that's neglected here? So maintenance is also a key issue in terms of the infrastructure plan. Then also, how do you create linkages between rural areas and poor provinces to create opportunities for them to develop from an economic perspective? And so the infrastructure we look at as well takes into account here those areas that were not serviced well, those areas that do not have good linkages to markets, not just locally but also export markets, and how do we then use this plan to address those linkages as well. The other issue is capacity constraints. Within the state, we're currently trying to do an assessment of what sort of capacity is available in terms of engineering skills, other infrastructure skills that's required. So we need to determine what lies within the state to actually deliver on infrastructure here. And is it possible to be less dependent on the external parties and actually use the capacity within the state to actually roll out infrastructure and roll it out strategically here? And of course, depending on the capacity within the state here, that will improve the coordination and integration of infrastructure across the state. Then the idea is also to scale up investment in infrastructure. So now that you have an idea of what infrastructure is out there, you can see what is strategic, you can see what is required over the short, medium and long term, and you can actually direct investments into those particular infrastructure. Also addressing the impact of prices, we've seen recently the whole Competition Commission case against the building industry, the cartel, and these all have an impact on prices here as well. Yeah. And also the ability of the state here, you know, it's all about, you know, prices is determined by how much you buy, what quantities you buy, and so, you know, individual projects might not be able to negotiate better prices, but collectively it might be sufficient to actually bring down the prices of inputs as well. Then, of course, finally, a major aim of the PICC and the infrastructure program is how do we support African development and integration here. And so, in short, I mean, we see infrastructure as critical to, you know, promote balanced economic development, unlock opportunities for communities and people. Also, it's important to use infrastructure to adequately promote the mineral extraction and beneficiation industries. Also, how do we use it to address socioeconomic needs? It will lead to job creation. And also, how do you integrate human settlements and economic development here so that it talks to growth areas here? So initially what had happened is that the PICC had gone to every department, every province here, and collected you know, information on projects that they were planning here. And so we collected information on more than 600 projects across the state. And then on that basis, an infrastructure plan was then put together with what we call strategic integrated projects, and I'll speak about more about that in my slides as follows here. So we have 18 strategic integrated projects. So what are these strategic projects? As I indicated earlier, when this PICC started, our unit then went out, collected information on various infrastructure projects here, and put together what we call an infrastructure book. So these range from mega projects to small local projects here, projects that were at various stages of implementation. And the PICC then developed a project template to say, you know, can we categorize projects into a particular template so that we can have, you know, sufficient information on these projects here in order to determine its strategic nature within the context of what the PICC wanted to achieve. And so we looked at project description, at which stage of construction and project was, where was it located, the cost, the scope of the project here, and we put together this whole infrastructure book of 645 projects here. Then what the PICC then did, it then had to sort of categorize all these projects into what we call strategic integrated projects here. And these are how do you take a road and link it to a mine and link it to a community and link it to water requirements here. So this is what the PIC. So what we did is that we took those 645 projects, we narrowed it down to what we considered that time as 150 of the most strategic projects that would unblock the potential for other projects also to prosper here. And we looked at issues such as, you know, does it address the issues of transportation, water and sanitation, energy and communication? Are there projects that are cross-cutting in nature? For example, land and human settlements are cross-cutting in nature. What's the social and industrial impact of that particular project here? And we're looking at projects of scale, of course. And then we also said that at least every province must have one catalytic project that we need to focus on here. And then once you have a sense of all these projects here, we can say, what's the funding requirements of these projects? So what the PICC doesn't do, we don't fund projects here. But we look at, you know, different models of funding, and we engage National Treasury, because all departments apply for funding from National Treasury, which we're not involved in. But what we do is we monitor the implementation of those projects here. But now and then we do have discussions with National Treasury with new thinking around funding for particular projects here. So what we did then is that we looked at which are the growth nodes in the country. So which are the areas which are showing huge growth in terms of population and economic growth here. We then said, you know, in terms of that here, so those are, firstly we're looking at what projects are catalytic in nature, in the sense that if you do these projects here, it has a catalytic effect across the country as a whole here. Then we're looking at those projects that are enabling socio-economic development here. So that's electricity, housing, regional integration projects here. And we need to then see, you know, where are the gaps in South Africa? So which are the underserviced areas? Who needs services here? Where are the gaps? Where's the growth? And based on all of those analyses here, we looked at, you know, how do you then put together these projects so that they make sense and they talk to one another and they integrate it with one another. And that's how the strategic integrated projects came about here. These are what we called the SIPs. So I'll just go in a bit of detail in terms of each and every SIP. So we have like five geographic SIPs. They have an impact in a geographic sense. SIP 1 is unlocking the northern mineral belt with Waterberg as a catalyst. And here we're looking at, you know, the rail, water, energy generation and transmission infrastructure in the Limpopo area that's linked to the mining industry. And also to how do you then link our mineral wealth to export markets, but also to our electricity generation within the country. And of course, to put up mines, you're going to need water. And when you have a mining town, then around mines, human settlements, there are settlements that take place. How do you manage that settlement? How do you provide services to those settlements here? So this particular SIP looks at, you know, the integration of rail, water, energy generation, transmission, human settlements, and also rail capacity to move the minerals out of South Africa to export markets, but also to local requirements here. SIP 2 is about how do you connect the Durban, Free State, and Gauteng logistics and industrial corridor here. This is to strengthen logistics and transport corridor by looking at things like internal ports. You have City Deep, which is an inland port. How do we then further develop the inland port so it can sufficiently provide for exports and create the linkage between sort of Gauteng through to Free State, right through to KZN here. It's also linking the Free State industrial strategy to that development corridor. And also, can we look at new opportunities for development in terms of our airports here? So the development of a potential aerotropolis around OR Tambo International as well as Dube Tradeport. SIP 3, the Southeastern Northern Corridor development. This focuses largely on the Eastern Cape. And here we're looking at projects such as the Mbubu Dam, which will then unblock, open up potential for farming within that area and potential opportunities for energy generation as well. We're also looking at the N2 Wild Coast Highway because it will connect the Eastern Cape to the KZN and improve transport and traffic and the flow of goods and services between the two economies here. But we also look at there's a huge manganese mining operation. How do we connect our rail and our port facility to the world's largest mining manganese mining operation currently taking place in that area? And also looking at the Kuha area. So we're looking at the possibility of the Mtombo refinery to add to our energy requirements here. But also, you know, what port and rail upgrades need to happen so we can unblock export opportunities in the auto sector. So four focuses specifically on the Northwest. Huge challenges there, socio-economic infrastructure. So here we're looking at, you know, how can we fast-track and make sure that implementation takes place on roads, rail, bulk water, transmission infrastructure, but also how does this link to the development of mining economies, the agricultural sector, and also tourism opportunities within that province here. SIP 5, Saldanha Northern Cape Development Corridor, this looks at the Saldanha IDZ. It also links the iron ore industry to export markets and local markets here. But also there's huge opportunities to supplement our energy requirements with gas and oil activities along the African West Coast. And how do we put in the infrastructure that will address and unblock all of that here? Then we have what we call energy SIPs. So we have SIP 8, which focuses on the green energy. So this looks at solar water heater programs. It looked at, recently the IPPs, the private players that are providing energy using sun, wind, and water to provide energy to the energy grid. We then look at SIP 9, which looks at electricity generation. We look at, Medupi, Kusile, the big power projects and what's happening on those. And then SIP 10 focuses on electricity transmission and distribution here. And here we're focusing on household electrification, the speed at which it's moving here, what is required to actually make sure that we can cut down on the pace with which electricity is provided to households here. And how can you use that, the supply chain to bring down prices and actually put more money into actually rolling out infrastructure. Then we have spatial SIPs, and these focuses on a broader area. So for example, SIP 6 is developing a capacity to assist the 23 least resource districts with, once again, water, electricity, sanitation, bulk infrastructure, and road maintenance here. SIP 7 is about how do you integrate the new transport projects that are coming on board with human settlement. How do you connect people living in particular urban areas to working spaces here? Can we plan things a bit better? And so this is what SIP 7 is all about here. SIP 11 is about how do we unblock the agro potential of South Africa here. And so here we're looking at, can we expand the production and employment of small-scale farming, rural development? Also, what sort of storage facilities do we need? What sort of transport networks do we need to connect, agricultural produce to the market here? And we're looking at rural tourism infrastructure, because we see that holds a lot of potential for the tourism sector. In terms of social infrastructure, here we look at hospitals, the revitalization of public hospitals, the building of six mega hospitals. We then also look at the school build. We're looking at how do we address the backlogs in terms of the delivery of schools. Can we better procure or plan? So for example, recently we're looking at what's the potential use of alternative or innovative building technology to build schools here, because you can build them much quicker and much cheaper than your conventional building of bricks and mortar here. In terms of higher education infrastructure, I mean, universities are there, but there's a problem in terms of student accommodations. You can't sometimes increase the amount of people attending universities, or especially people from rural areas, because accommodation is a problem. So how do you link universities with accommodation, but then also the creation of university towns here? Students, they have life after university, at night and that, residences, retail, recreation. So these are, how do you create this and how do you make linkages between all of these so that any development at the university talks to that, and any development around universities must actually talk to the needs of the university. Then we have two knowledge SIPs. The one is the SKA and Meerkat, and of course the SKA Meerkat is talking about building an advanced radio telescope. There are linkages here between Africa and South Africa. And then SIP 15 is about broadband coverage. Is it possible to create 100% broadband coverage across the country? How quick can we do that? How can the private sector partner with government in ensuring that the entire country could be covered through broadband here? We're also focusing specifically on how do we connect schools so that schools can get internet connectivity. Regional SIPs, I spoke earlier that there's a SIP focusing specifically on projects that look at regional integration for Africa. And here, once again, how do we use our relationships in Africa to actually supply our needs in terms of water and energy in the short, medium to long term here? But also, in addition to that here, what do we need to do to actually complement the free trade area to create this market of 600 million people from an infrastructure perspective? And the last SIP is on water and sanitation here. And here we're looking at, how can we address the backlog in terms of the provision of water and basic sanitation? And how do we actually look at sustainable supply of water to meet social needs and support economic growth here? And just to mention that all these projects are being implemented by national departments here. So water is being handled by Water Affairs and all the agencies. All we're doing from a PICC perspective, we're actually monitoring and we're looking at linkages between these projects and other projects as well. So the aim of the PICC is to look over time as to how can we move from poor performance in government with, in relation to infrastructure to integrated multi-program delivery. So for example, on the left, these are some of the issues that are impacting negatively in terms of infrastructure rollout, poor planning, late start to projects, poor project control, unrealistic acceleration of projects here, political alignment with no champion for projects here, permits, authorizations relating to projects that delays projects here, non-payment of contractors. And those are some of the issues that the PIC is looking to address through the to look at improving program coordination in the state, aligning national, provincial and local structures. How do we create long-term support for long-term projects here? So you look at multi-year financing for projects instead of annual financing for projects here. Are we able to predict the process for implementing projects here? So you could streamline regulatory approvals, EIAs, water use licenses. How do we plan better to build projects that can actually bring down the cost of those projects here? Can we standardize designs and delivery of projects for schools, hospitals, and clinics here? Also strengthening project controls and monitoring in government departments and state-owned enterprises to make sure that projects are delivered within the time frame set, within the budget that has been allocated to those projects here. And how can we report simply on the progress of these projects so you know the layman can understand what's happening on a particular project? And also, in order to, if you do this here, you can actually pick up early warning systems or issues early on in the project so that you can actually address bottlenecks early on at a very high level within government. In terms of the PICC structure, the PICC has what we call the PICC Council, which is at the level of the president and includes cabinet ministers, premiers, executive mayors. Then you have a PICC Manco, which is chaired by Minister Nkwinti of Rural Development, and this comprises a few ministers, and they actually support the PICC Council in unblocking things at a very high level in terms of monitoring and unblocking the projects here. You have a PICC Secretariat that is chaired by Minister Patel of Economic Development, and he's supported by some deputy ministers that oversee the work, the day-to-day work of the technical team. I'm part of the PICC technical task team. We do the day-to-day running around in terms of ensuring and collecting data on the projects here, ensuring that the unblocking happens and fulfilling the requirements of the PICC Manco and Secretariat here. We then what we have, each SIP, each of the 18 SIP has what we call an intergovernmental forum chair. So each SIP has a chair in the form of a minister. So for example, SIP 1, it's chaired by Minister Gigaba, and it has what we call a SIP coordinator. So we've utilized state-owned companies to actually implement each and every SIP. So each of the 18 SIPs have a state-owned company that's responsible for pulling together information on the projects, integrating it, and coming up with a plan on how best to roll out the projects within that particular SIP here. And so the SIP coordinator, for example, Eskom is the coordinator of SIP 1, Transnet is the coordinator of SIP 2, and TCTA is the coordinator of SIP 3 here. And they work with their IGHA in the form of the minister to actually ensure that that SIP or the projects within that particular SIP are rolled out here. And then, of course, you have implementation agencies here. So the SIP coordinators are not implementation agents. They wear two hats sometimes. So Transnet, in terms of SIP 2, is just a coordinator, but they're also an implementation agent in the sense that they roll out rail infrastructure within the country here. This is in terms of some of the SIPs that has alignment with the tourism sector. So, for example, we see the infrastructure that's being put into place across the various SIPs, the roads, the water facilities, the dams that are being put in place. Those impact on the tourism industry in quite a big way here. So these are some of the SIPs. I mentioned, you know, unblocking or looking for opportunities for tourism in Northwest and SIP 4. Integrated the infrastructure under SIP 6 would assist with unblocking tourism opportunities and potential. SIP 7, the public transport system that's being put in place will certainly go a long way in encouraging people to use public transport, but also to go to places they've never been before. SIP 11, we're looking at rural tourism infrastructure and how that's linked to the infrastructure that we're using for rural areas. Higher education infrastructure, there once again we're talking about university towns that have the potential to attract tourism there. ICT, I mean 100% broadband would actually open up the potential for many sectors including tourism. SIP 16, the SK and Meerkat, I mean that could be a tourism site. And of course regional integration here, infrastructure that facilitates cross-border trade, I think, is linked to tourism as well. SIP 18, a lot of the dams that are being built have tourism infrastructure being put around them for recreational purposes, but also for conservation of water resources here. And basically, what we're saying in terms of the infrastructure plan, it's actually a bold effort to transform our economy and lay the basis for growth in jobs over the long term here. It's an opportunity to get everyone behind a common vision in terms of infrastructure with government, business and labour. But it's also an opportunity to re-industrialise our economy by looking at what can we manufacture locally in terms of the inputs that goes into infrastructure. Also, what sort of skills can we develop over time so that we make sure we have the right skills available at the right point in time to help us roll out our infrastructure, and how do we use this to green our economy, and also how do we use it to create more opportunities for empowerment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nagoda. We shall allow questions for the next 10 minutes and thereafter we shall relieve you, Mr. Nagoda, if there are any questions. Yes, sir.
Something that I wouldn't say is hidden, because it is quite obvious, is that a lot of the issues that you've raised and that are measured and that are being reported on is part-time tourism. I would almost say the majority of the opportunities that are tourism-related is a secondary business almost. There is a function already for the water and then we use it for recreation. Is that specifically reported on? Because that in itself is a measure of job retention, because a lot of people are seasonal workers, and we should be measuring that. There are a lot of places like in our Cedarburg region where we've got the rooibos tea farming, where people are very seasonal, very susceptible to the tea price. But if agritourism is brought in there, that job retention element can come in. But we need to measure this so that we can monitor and control it. And I haven't seen in what you've given us that we are actually looking for those elements.
Yes, Mr. Lacuna.
Just to let you know that the projects that we do have, we're tracking what's the employment impact of those particular projects here. Across all the projects here. So, for example, talking about rural tourism here, SIP 11, the coordinator, looks at that specifically. So they would look at, what are the tourism opportunities in South Africa. They look at what the rural agricultural projects are taking place here. They would raise up and lift up issues relating to that particular sector here through their detailed reporting here. So you won't see it here, but it comes through in the detailed reports here. And they would raise up issues such as seasonal workers here and the impact of those industries on seasonal workers and how to overcome that as well here. So in the background, the SIP coordinators themselves are doing a lot of detailed work to address issues like job creation, issues that's happening on site here, issues that the government needs to take note of here and how to address those here. But most of the things that we're addressing are from an infrastructure perspective here. So the jobs in all of that we're tracking is related to infrastructure specifically.
No, it seems that we are not having any other question on this, on aligning the tourism industry to the residential infrastructure plan. And therefore, Mr. Kasim Nakuda, thank you very much, and you are released. Thanks. The next mega project would be the significance of local government in tourism development by DG Mr. Vusuma Donzela, Director General of Cooperative Governments. Over to you, Mr. Matonzela.
Thank you very much, Director of Proceedings. I thought I should ascend the podium because I realized that at this time I must be competing with the after effects of lunch. So if I were to sit there, I wouldn't be in a position to project as well as I should, so I could still make sure that we're awake. Director of Proceedings, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, perhaps before I do that, I take it that the slides have been distributed. So you needn't frantically take notes as I speak, but I'll try and pace myself well enough. I've made sure that we've captured all the punchlines in those slides. So sit back and relax. Director of Proceedings, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, Honorable Kumete, the Deputy Minister of Tourism, Honorable Togo Kasa, members of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, colleague Directors General, Ambassador Kinsley Makubela, and Mr. Sposiso Faba, Tourism Sector, Art and Culture Chief Executives and Actors, Senior Managers and staff of the Department of Tourism, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Oh yeah, that's more like it. It is a privilege to speak here today and daunting to join the eminent role of presenters at this summit. On this occasion, I'm reminded of how a renowned scientist, Peter Medawar, began his public lecture at my favorite university in the United Kingdom, the name of which I will purposely omit. And this is how he began. I hope I shall not be thought ungracious if I say at the outset that nothing on earth would have induced me to attend the kind of lecture you may think I'm going to give. So unlike Medawar, I will not deride your judgment in coming back to listen to my presentation this afternoon, especially after lunch. The brief we received in our invitation to address the summit was titled Significance of Local Government in Tourism Development. As we carefully considered this topic, we decided to deliberately steer clear of the word significant and rather adopted the title The Importance of Local Government in Tourism. We thought that importance implies the value, whereas significance may imply the quantum, the extent of which we might culpably have failed to measure. In addition to importance being a more straightforward term, I confess that for self-serving reasons, we also considered that in fact, we could easily flip this title around and speak about the importance of tourism in local government, as the topic is just as important to us in the local government sector. Hence my presentation. In my presentation, I will speak to both of these issues. An article that appeared recently in the Pretoria News on Thursday, September 12, 2013, carried the headline, "Tourists are lured by quality of our drinking water." That was on page 12. It's an opinion piece by the Department of Water Affairs. And the article states that the Department of Water Affairs is working closely with municipalities to ensure the high standard of clean drinking water in their respective jurisdictions. The article cites, amongst other interventions, the recognition of best practices in water waste management among municipalities through the awarding of Green Drop certification program run by that department. So in the context of the deliberations of this summit, under the theme Removing Barriers for Tourism Growth to fulfill the National Development Plan, the importance of the local sphere of government in tourism development becomes immediately palpable from this article. I will come back to this point later in this presentation. This presentation is structured as follows. First, we address the question why the local sphere of government must pay attention to any discourse on tourism development by drawing on some of the mandating principles. We then flip the coin and point out that in fact, mandating prescripts or not, the tourism sector is important as a driver for local economic development. We further consider local government challenges that are potential barriers to tourism development and growth. And finally, we look at a departmental response to the interplay between local government's tourism challenges and conclude with areas of possible collaboration between the two departments, that is cooperative governance and tourism. As set out in section 152, chapter 7 of the Constitution, one of the objectives of local government is to promote social and economic development. We also know that part of the developmental mandate of municipalities is to prudently structure and effectively manage their administrations to ensure that their budgeting and planning processes give priority to the basic needs of the community and to promote the social and economic development of the community. We also know that local tourism is singled out in Schedule 4, Capital B of the Constitution as one of the competent areas of local government. Further, in terms of Schedule 4, small a, of the same constitution, tourism is also a concurrent responsibility between national and provincial governments. There are various other mandating instruments and prescripts, such as the White Paper on Local Government and the Tourism Act, respectively, that basically make the case that the local sphere of government has a duty to promote and support economic development within the confines of its powers and functions. From all this, we conclude that as a priority economic sector of government and a stimulus for economic growth and employment creation, local government has an obligation to support the development of the tourism sector. To us within local government, tourism development fits within the local economic development function of municipalities. In fact, in a typical municipality, all tourism developments or support activities are undertaken under local economic development. Hence, in this presentation, we make the point that our understanding of local economic development is inseparable from our understanding of tourism development in municipalities. As a priority job driver in the context of the new growth path. The contribution of tourism, of the tourism sector to the South African economy has been very encouraging, if not inspiring. The fact that between the years 2011-2012, tourist arrivals in South Africa exceeded the global growth of 3.9% by a whopping 6.2%, having recorded 10.2%, is an achievement of no small measure. That alone is a positive storyline that calls for our collective attention. This sector is also acknowledged as one of the few, apart from agriculture and agro-processing, that have the potential to make an impact on developing rural economies. For example, through eco-tourism and culture-based industries. And also alluded to in the National Development Plan. Lastly, the sector is recognized for its labor absorption potential and the low skills-based requirements. The value chain in the tourism sector and the overall impact on other subsectors and activities within the local economy imply that the economic impact of tourism, one tourism offering or product is felt widely there within. For example, in the area of transport, in the area of catering, banking, accommodation, etc. We here make the point that the fact that the job creation contribution of the tourism sector and the overall expenditure by tourists take place within a local area, thus contributing to local economic development, job creation, and the overall economic viability of municipalities, is significant from a local economic development point of view. Hence, we are of the view that a growing tourism sector means a growing local economy. A growing local economy means an increase in the viability of our municipalities from the point of view of revenue collection, and a reduction in the demand for social grants and the provision of free basic services. We now turn back to the topic of the day, why and how the local sphere of government is an important enabler for tourism development. Simply put, tourism products or attractions are located within the local area. Therefore, based on the services they provide, municipalities can either enhance or hinder the development of tourism. This is the very essence of our presentation here today. Professor Christian Rogerson, a South African expert on local economic development, sums it up very well in his work on tourism and local economic development, Issues for Local Government, published in 2013, where he pointedly observes that local government has a direct impact on the total tourism experience of tourists, and further that the competitive position and attractiveness of any tourism destination is influenced by the diversity, quality, and overall blend of its services and resources. The White Paper on Local Government states that local government can play an important role in boosting the local economy by investing in what it terms the basics. This could include providing good quality, cost-effective services, targeted assistance to all to a particular sector in the local economy which has the potential to expand and create jobs, simplification of municipal procedures, directly put, cutting down the bureaucratic red tape, marketing and investment support, small business support services, to mention but a few. Similarly, the White Paper on the Development and Promotion of Tourism of 1996 states that tourism is driven by the private sector and that it is firmly based in local communities. It further states that municipalities influence tourism products in how they manage their socio-economic environment and how they provide services to their communities. Some of the examples of what local government does or does not do, which can make or break tourism development, include the following. Provision of basic services. This includes water, sanitation, and electricity. I would imagine it would also include refuse removal. The provision and maintenance of public infrastructure. We refer here to roads, energy, signage, public transport, parking, etc. The provision and maintenance of tourist attractions and other public amenities, such as museums, art galleries, parks, maintenance of visitor information services, etc. Promotion of the physical attractiveness and aesthetics of the locality, the beautification of the area. And lastly, of course, the regulatory environment, that's the bylaws, the database of tourism offerings, land use planning, and zoning. Additionally, the Department of Tourism is in its source document called the South African Planning Toolkit for Local Government, highlights the following roles for local government. Supporting sustainable tourism development through local economic development and integrated development plans. Appropriate infrastructure, public education, awareness, and general training. Acting as catalyst for new business development and supporting existing enterprises. Promoting partnerships between the public and private sector, maintenance of the natural environment, and political will to support the sector. Having considered all these possible roles for local government in removing barriers for tourism growth to fulfill the National Development Plan, we now consider some of the challenges that limit the extent to which the local sphere of government is able to play its part optimally. To address this issue of challenges, we thought we would start off with an extract from the National Tourism Sector Strategy, document on page 29, which states as follows, and I quote, "Despite tourism's significance, though, local governments have few dedicated or part-time tourism personnel. Experience and knowledge of tourism are extremely limited, and with rare exceptions, no budget is allocated to tourism planning and development activities. The entrenched belief that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, inherited from the former national department responsible for local government, is that there is no need to plan or budget for tourism support. Therefore, the capacity building for tourism is critical to improve the overall planning for and management of South Africa's tourism industry." Close quote. This statement basically makes the following points: that capacity dedicated to tourism function is a challenge, as is tourism planning. There's a lot of competition, I can say. Leadership is needed from the national department that coordinates municipalities, namely DICOG. And thirdly, that capacity building for tourism will improve the planning deficiencies. We will address the first and third issues first, as they are interrelated, and then we will consider the second issue. The first and third issues. Firstly, we concur with the essence of the observations made being that the capacity in municipalities is a major challenge, particularly for local economic development, hence tourism functions. In fact, other observations that have been made linked to this issue are that as a result of these challenges, tourism is lagging behind in local governments. The tourism plans fall outside IDPs and therefore are not funded. That lack of technical expertise for tourism at local government level and misalignment of tourism plans across the spheres of government manifested at the local government level. The manifestation of all these has been the following: the deterioration in quality of facilities and services, lack of awareness, opportunities for new product development not maximized, regulatory environment unresponsive, and the lack of support from local authorities. In responding to these issues, we must first understand where the tourism function might reside within a municipality, what issues such a business unit deals with, and further, the general planning issues impacting on the tourism function. But we will return to this issue as the main thrust of our presentation in a moment. With regard to the second issue, about the importance of clear leadership from the Department of Cooperative Governance in order to guide municipalities, in this regard, we thought it would be proper to first highlight the reference the department has made to the tourism sector in the National Framework for Local Economic Development, which was adopted in 2006 by the then DPLG. The framework document states the vision of local economies as robust and inclusive local economies exploiting local opportunities, real potential and competitive advantages, addressing local needs and contributing to national development objectives. In unpacking this vision, the framework states that, among other things, that local economies described above must capture social, cultural, recreational, sports, and tourism experiences. In two other areas within the framework, emphasis is paid on the role of the different spheres of government, the private sector and the community sector, and all local role players to promote local economic development. In this regard, the framework further makes the point that economic growth, social development, and poverty relief goals can be best achieved through a range of complementary developmental projects, including tourism, which capitalize on local opportunities and address specific needs. The point we make here is that the policy intent within the erstwhile DPLG and presently the Department of Cooperative Governance, in as far as the importance of the sector is concerned, was always clear and remains so to this day. As the case was made earlier, we fully acknowledge the role of the tourism sector in stimulating competitive and sustainable local economies. Admittedly, at present, DCOP does not have joint programs with the Department of Tourism, the lead sector department on tourism, which is regretted. We take consolation from the fact that this summit today presents us with a unique opportunity to start talking about joint programs driven from the national level. As indicated earlier, the tourism function is a municipality in a municipality resides within the local economic development unit. Generally, the local economic development functions and units of municipalities are one of the most challenged units of functionality. At the core of the problem is that the fact that there are competing demands on the responsibilities of municipalities. And as we would barely know, basic services delivery tends to draw the main focus of attention of municipalities. This happens often as a result of efforts to respond to current or forestall the embarrassment that comes with service delivery projects. Consequently, such functions as local economic development, which are inclusive of tourism, unfortunately receive less attention in that context. Other challenges worth noting are the following. Conceptually, there is inconsistent understanding of what is local economic development and what local economic development units ought to focus on. Hence the State of Local Government report made the observation that LED has been found to be erratic in municipalities. Because local economic development, which is inclusive of tourism, is a concurrent function across the three spheres of government, there are challenges with alignment in terms of policy formulation, planning, support, and implementation. Local economic development is traditionally referred to as an unfunded mandate by many municipalities. Hence, the funding for most local economic development units is very minimal. Local economic development human resources capacity is, in most municipalities, is very minimal to make the requisite impact, which is a symptom indicative of the lack of appreciation by many municipalities as to what they should do with local economic development functions and the impact they can make there. In some municipalities, there is no tourism manager or tourism officer at all. All LED-related functions, be they agriculture, enterprise development, or tourism development, depend on a single individual. And in some areas, linked to capacity issues, most municipalities, municipal officials cannot access external sources of funding due to lack of capacity to develop bankable proposals and business plans relating to tourism. Now, unpacking the planning challenge further. From purely a planning point of view, the main challenge currently faced by municipalities is the lack of sectoral planning out of which they can draw inspiration for the local tourism plan. Without a tourism sector plan, coordinated, championed and led by the National Department of Tourism, many municipalities will continue to struggle to develop local tourism plans. As some of you may well know, the development of local tourism plans and strategies is usually an outsourced function with limited quality assurance, leading to limited ownership and understanding of what the sector can do. There is also limited availability of local data, credible economic analysis of the local environment, and evidence-based strategic planning for the tourism sector. There are ineffective platforms dedicated to integrated planning at national and provincial levels, resulting in the parachuting of initiatives from elsewhere in the other spheres to municipalities, and further resulting in lack of buy-in and support. Proposals on what is to be done is what I would like to talk about now as I taper down my presentation. We have spent a bit of time dissecting the problem because we believe it is important to understand the issues faced by municipalities. Now we focus on what can be done. Firstly, given the reality that the Department of Cooperative Government, together with municipalities, are not necessarily sector specialists in the field of tourism development, partnerships are critical between the two national departments for the benefit of municipalities and the tourism sector. In this regard, we believe that the Department of Cooperative Government should interact more closely in policy development initiatives. Currently, the Department of Cooperative Government is updating the 2006 Local Economic Development Framework and we'll further be working on a comprehensive strategy in the next financial year. This is a perfect opportunity for the tourism sector to influence the future direction of municipalities in terms of promoting and supporting the sector. Secondly, the reality is that local economic development is underfunded, and consequently, so is tourism development in municipalities. We invite the Department of Tourism to consider incentive-based specific funding directed at municipalities to promote tourism at local level. The Department of Cooperative Governance and the Department of Tourism should work jointly to consider the model and configuration of such funding to ensure that there is accountability and impact. In terms of capacity building, we understand that the Department of Tourism, in partnership with SAUDA, is starting to look at training for municipal officials. We would like to be part of this intervention in order to ensure alignment with other training interventions and overall policy direction for local economic development. Equally, we would like to support the piloting and rollout of the South African Tourism Planning Toolkit for Local Government that was developed by the Department of Tourism. The Department of Cooperative Governance has established a national integrated development support team whose function is to support municipal development planning processes. This includes assisting municipalities to develop sector plans, which will include tourism. The benefits of improved integrated planning for tourism imply that other sectors such as infrastructure, community services, safety, etc., can develop support plans to promote the sector. Accordingly, provincial and national governments can gain confidence in allocating resources to municipalities. The Department of Tourism should use its participation in this structure to influence municipal IGPs. The Department of Cooperative Governance has developed a revised or customized IGP framework for municipalities outside the metros and secondary cities, which, among other things, provide guidelines on how to integrate sector plans in the IGPs. In essence, our message is that we believe the opportunities for collaboration between our departments are enormous, and that indeed, working together, the Department of Cooperative Governance and the Department of Tourism, we can do much more. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Madonsela, for a very erudite presentation. It is refreshing indeed, and it was a pleasure listening to you. Yes, I do not know. Let me check. Should I give you 5 minutes now, just to stretch, or perhaps should we discuss now? 5 minutes. Okay, let us just take 5 minutes and then come back so that we can vigorously interrogate the presentation. Thank you.